Greetings and welcome to Bear Soup. We have a furbulous program today, so listen up, gorillas. The hairy-chested Tom Ford on the cover of The Advocate on his new film based on the Isherwood novel, A Single Man. Interview with Jonathan Cohn from the new edition of Bears on Bears. Reading of Jonathan's hilarious story in Bears in the Wild. And the usual bear puns and furry audio folderol. Sometimes you eat the wolf, and sometimes you eat the bear soup. Thanks for listening to episode number 59 of the Bear Soup Podcast. Streaming online at bearradio.net Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific times. Bear Soup is also available by subscription on iTunes. Archives can be found under the Bear Soup tab on the Bear Soup blog at ronsurasha.com. ronsurasha. Presumably you can tell without seeing me that I'm recording this in all of my stark naked hairiness in a bubbling hot tub. Lest we forget, Bear Soup is proudly sponsored by our buds at Bare Bones Books. Go visit them at bearbonesbooks.com. This is your host, Mr. Bear of the Year 2008. According to the independent poll taken by our friends at The Complete Bear, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the internets from New London, Connecticut, USA. So it's really not every issue that The Advocate has a hairy-chested man. In this December issue, The Advocate cover man Tom Ford tells all, from his first kiss to the midlife crisis that led to his directorial debut, Christopher Isherwood's novel A Single Man, an article by Kevin Sessom. Quote, I don't think of myself as gay. That doesn't mean that I'm not gay. I just don't define myself by my sexuality, says Tom Ford, with no sense of irony in his voice. Ford built a fashion empire at Gucci. When Yves Saint Laurent was acquired by Gucci in 1999, he reinvented that brand. Since then, he has launched his own Tom Ford line of menswear and accessories. Always throughout his career, Holt collections and marketing campaigns were designed around his highly honed sense of the needs of others to define themselves as sexual beings. Quote, the gay aspect of A Single Man certainly wasn't what drew me to make a film of the Christopher Isherwood book. It was its human aspect, that unifying quality. He continues, segueing into a discussion of his remarkable directorial debut. The film, which was nominated for the Golden Lion top prize at the Venice Film Festival, and for which Ford won Venice's Queer Lion Prize and Colin Firth the Best Actor Award, opens in limited release December 11th. Quote, if you said name 10 things that define me, being gay wouldn't make the list. I think Isherwood was like that, too. There are many gay characters in his works because his work is so autobiographical, but their gayness isn't the focus. The one thing I liked about Isherwood's work, especially when I was younger and grappling with my sexuality, is that there was no issue about it in his writing. That was quite a modern concept back during the time when he was writing. Quite honestly, I just don't think about my sexuality. But maybe this has to do with being a part of the first generation to benefit from all the struggles of the gay men and lesbians that came before us. Ford is lounging on a plush sofa in the upstairs inner sanctum of his eponymous store on Manhattan's Madison Avenue. The sofa is a shade of gray that matches the lighter gray of his shirt and the darker gray of his trousers. His closely cropped hair is not gray, a decision that seems more his than his hair's. And that was from an interview feature piece on Tom Ford in The Advocate. We are left to speculate as to whether Tom Ford is dyeing his chest hair as well. now, folks, I'd like to read to you an interview with Jonathan Cohen, entitled Fair Like Him. Jonathan Cohen was born in Toronto, Canada, to non-bear parents. It was only when he sprouted body fur, grew a beard, and started to resemble a fuzzy plush toy that he realized his true destiny as a bear. Jonathan has spent the last few years observing the bear community from the sidelines, making notes, and studying this subculture of often large, often hairy, often bearded, and always cuddly gay men. He currently lives in Toronto and makes his living as a technical writer. His first novel, Bear Like Me, released in 2003. His first novel, Bear Like Me, released in 2003, from Haworth Press. First, Jonathan, how long have you known about bears? Jonathan, I learned about the bear community in 1994. Having been a conventional twink for many years, I found myself gaining a lot of weight when I went away to school and was despondent that my sex life suffered as a result. A kind man that I slept with that year informed me that there was such a thing as a bear club and bear community that would welcome people with my looks and stature, which I thought was pretty crazy. A few years later, 1995 to 96, as a long-haired, bearded, hairy fellow, I was looking for other long-haired men and stumbled into the IRC EF net at Bear Cave to ask if bears liked long-haired men. The answer was, some do, and thus my acquaintance with bears was born. Question: to what extent have you participated in bear events or bear club functions? Jonathan: not very much. The first event I went to was IBR 1996, which was total stimulation overload for me. Being a very shy man, I found the whole scene overwhelming. I have attended a few bear busts over the years, beer busts, and the occasional bar night, but I find most of my interactions with bears to be online, or one-to-one, as friends or more. Being a potential object of attraction to a group of gay men is a hard thing for a shy man to deal with. Question: what attracts you to bear men? Jonathan: to a great extent at first, I think it was the idea that they were interested in me. After some time, though, I was able to break through the societal conditioning that twink equals good, bear equals bad, and find the sexual aspects of bears very erotic. I think bears and non-bears share a lot of common personality traits, though the bear community is noted to be more sharing, caring, and friendly than the non-bear one. Physically, there's also the body and facial hair, and the solidity and presence of a bear to cuddle with. Question: are you big on cuddling? Jonathan: very much so. Sex is all about expression for me, but it's a more limited form of expression than cuddling. With cuddling, you can talk at the same time, and the way you move your hands over your partner's body is much more expressive than oral or anal sex. I like to spell out words by tracing them on a partner's back. Question: what a perfectly lovely way of expressing physical affection for a writer. So, what initially inspired you to write your novel, Bear Like Me? Jonathan: in 1998, I had been reading the Bears mailing list, the BML, for quite some time. I found the repeated debates over monogamy, shaving, and so on amusing. Not trivial, but amusing. At the same time, the internet was starting to experience the proliferation of bear websites, and I saw more and more bear merchandise. Any community that can take itself that seriously, I thought, was ripe for a gentle satire. At the same time, in early 1998, I had had to leave a very difficult job for medical reasons. My fantasy to have revenge on my former employer became a subplot that took on a lot of importance in the book's storyline. Question: did you know initially that you were pioneering the first bear-themed novel? Jonathan: there hadn't been a novel about the contemporary bear community published, to my knowledge. I wanted to be the first one. The internet industry had a term for it in the internet boom: first mover advantage. The first one to enter a market space would dominate it. People would always remember the first bear novel. I had to get cracking. The other problem was that I felt it would be difficult to market a book to publishers that was aimed at the bear community. So I had to come up with a crossover concept that would interest non-bear readers as well. Thus, the plotline of a non-bear disguising himself as a bear would appeal to them too, and avoid having a lot of the in-jokes go over the non-bear readers' heads. Question. Peter, the protagonist, finds himself out of a job and in the position of transforming himself from a twink into a bear and then infiltrating the local and national bear community. Jonathan, yes, in order to write an exposé about it. One of the themes of the novel is that changing your external environment can definitely change your internal environment. He does not remain a twink in a bear's body. Question. Do you personally relate to Peter and his transformation into a bearish body and coming into bear community? Jonathan, in retrospect, I do. Not at the time when I wrote the book, though. As I mentioned before, it was a way to turn the story into a crossover novel. Looking back, I can see that it's very much my story, without the guidance of the bear who assists him in his transformation. The weight gain I went through and its effects on my personality and perceived place in the gay community were very difficult to handle, so I think I suppressed how much I related to Peter until a year or two after the book was finished. Question. In your novel, you satirize many aspects of beardom. Is that because you believe there are many faults to the subculture, or is that just your nature to poke fun at things? Jonathan. As with any culture, I think there's a group of people who buy into it totally, a group of people who are into it for other reasons and buy into it very little, and the vast majority that fall somewhere in between. The satire comes with taking the worldview of people who buy into it totally and taking it up a notch or two until it's absurd yet still recognizable. The other way to do it is to take positive statements that everyone believes and show that there's not necessarily the case. The idea that the bear community is a place where you can express your individuality may be true, but then why do most people dress so similarly? And if the bear community embraces diversity, why do we see so few bears of color? Excellent question. The title of your novel is obviously an homage to John Howard Griffin's novel Black Like Me, and the plot of your novel involves personal transformation in order to find out how it feels to be a minority type. Do you feel that bears have been discriminated against in the same way as blacks? Is that a point you're trying to make in the novel? Jonathan, not so much discrimination as segregation and invisibility. Bears stick to themselves mostly, just as twinks stick to themselves mostly. At the same time, I don't think a twink owner of an underwear store in the gay ghetto would hire a bear as a salesperson. There also seems to be discrimination against men who are large, hairy, and bearded in the general community. Large men equals slobs, hairy men equals not desirable according to media standards, bearded men equals suspicious, as well as against men who dress downwardly mobile. As well as against men who dress downwardly mobile, like the plaid flannel look. I've had experiences with that, and some of that makes it into the novel. For example, the concept of being pulled over for DWB, driving while bear. Question, you were pulled over for DWB? Jonathan. No, but I was in a bank paying part of my tuition, with long hair, a beard, and a lumberjack coat. The teller, a sweet old woman, said, "I guess you're not here to pay the entire tuition at once, are you?" implying that I couldn't afford it because of my looks. The DWB, which corresponds to the black DWB, driving while black, was just an amusing way to point that type of experience out. Question. Have other bear books influenced yours? Jonathan. Actually, I hadn't read any previous bear books. It's got a guilty look. When I wrote Bear Like Me. I think the only ones out at the time were the Bear Books 1 and 2. I don't think Song of the Loon qualifies as a look at contemporary bear culture. I don't think that Song of the Loon qualifies as a look at contemporary bear culture. Question. What influence on bears would you like to see the book have? Jonathan, I'd love to see them recognize themselves, laugh, and feel the emotions I felt when I put the words down on paper. This novel wasn't meant as a political or philosophical work, but a crazy comic strip. I'd love to see them buy lots of copies, of course, and I'd love for the novel's slogan, which appears nowhere within the book, actually. Woof means never having to say you're sorry, to become a catchphrase. Question, any plans for a second bear-themed novel? Jonathan, it'd be fun to write a sequel if there was interest out there by readers. I deliberately left a couple of hidden, unresolved plot threads just in case. I'm not sure I'd write a novel that was set in the bear community without being about the bear community in some way. It's like writing a book set 30 years from now that doesn't use any of the advanced technology in its theme or plot. Why do it? Question. Any final comments? Jonathan. Interested readers can contact me at bearlikeme@yahoo.com. I always enjoy hearing feedback, positive and negative. And remember, woof means never having to say you're sorry. This was my online interview with novelist Jonathan Cohn, author of Bear Like Me, published in American Bear in December of 2002. Called Bears and Their Toys, written by Jonathan Cohn, author of Bear Like Me, the novel. And this is a story that is going to be included in the forthcoming fiction anthology, Bears in the Wild, published by Bear Bones Books. Okay, so Sam and I were sitting in our shared office at National Bear Magazine when the package arrived, addressed to me. I wasn't all that worried. The only feedback I ever got on my columns was the occasional 20-page email and the subscription to Elle magazine. I felt confident that my positive outlook, sunny disposition, and bronzer could help me weather anything my readers might throw at me. Then I opened the box. Inside was a miniature bear, a real two-legged one, about 11 inches high, with a beard, flannel, and tiny cowboy boots. The tag on the doll read, "Bearbee." "My God," Sam said, "it's the final commercialization of the bear movement." Then after a second, "Give it to me. I want to play with it." We both took turns examining Bear B. According to the box, he came with realistic simulated beard and chest hair flocking, two outfits, jeans, plaid shirt, leather vest, and jeans, leather shirt, plaid vest, and was anatomically correct. Sam pulled open the fly of the microscopic 501s. "He looks just like your first boyfriend, only smaller." "That was a medical condition," I shot back. Then I discovered the pull string on Bearbee's back and gave it a good yank.
"Monogamy is hard," it said in a tinny voice.
Sam and I just looked at each other. That's when Smokey appeared at the door. As editor-in-chief of NBM, he had to have something to do with this. He grinned. "So, what do you think?" "I'm speechless," I said. Sam pulled the string again, and Bearbee said,
"I'm sorry, I don't have the rent money this month."
"We're betting the farm on this one," Smokey announced. "A massive campaign in print and on the web. I figure we can sell 10,000 of these suckers a year."
He looked at us slyly. "Market research says that this will appeal to bears' nesting and collecting instincts, as well as the fact that every bear has got to have what everyone else has."
"That is such crap,"
Sam sneered, grabbing the Bearbee out of my hands and stroking the simulated flocking.
Smokey turned to go. "One last thing, Carrie," he said. "Say something about it in your column. Something positive. Maybe you could go out on a date with it or something. Your boyfriend's still recovering from that depilation, right?"
After he'd left, I looked into Bearbee's devil-may-care eyes and sighed.
"I know who'd love it," I said, shaking my head.
"Richard." Sam was already busy surfing the web for porn.
"Who's that?"
I put the tiny hat with "bear!" Written on it on Bearbee's head.
The guy I'm dating this week. He's sweet, really he is, but just a bit dull. He collects things. Dildos? Sam asked, momentarily distracted from www.ourfirstbeartime.com. Spoons, bottle caps, Hummel figurines, I sighed. It's our 1.5 date tonight, and if we don't have bed sex, I'm going to have to dump him. You've had half a date with a guy and you haven't had sex yet? Sam asked, incredulous. Well, sex in the park doesn't count, I said. The true measure of a bear is when he invites you into his bed. And as I reflected that evening, it was so true. When a bear is over at your place, or in the bushes, or at a sex club, he's not usually expressing his whole sexual nature. It's only when you slip between his satin sheets that you discover what he's really made of. When I eased myself into his flannel sheets, I discovered a rope. A cable, really. Looks like you left this out, I said uneasily, holding it up. It seemed a bit greasy. Richard gave me a devil-may-care grin that reminded me of Barbie. Can I interest you in a little kink? He asked. Richard was naughty in that little cub kind of way, one of the Gen X bears who was still between university and real life at the age of 28. I looked at the rope and shrugged. Sure, go ahead, I said. I have to write a column about something this week. The next morning, I was gingerly poking pushpins into Barbie when Sam came in and did a double take. You look like you've been folded in half, he said, giving me a shoulder massage. Did his Hummel figurine collection fall on you? I finished my voodoo on Barbie and sighed. Last night, I was the fully posable action figure. I showed Sam a rough patch on my chin. I think Richard rubbed off some of my simulated flocking. You're such an amateur, Sam said, sitting down at his desk and comforting Barbie. When I was your age, I'd been branded as a bad boy, not to mention property of the Lazy Q Ranch. I groaned as my muscles shifted into a new chiropractic position. The problem is, I like Richard, but I can't take any more of this sex. I'm going to have to dump him after all. Oh, screw that, dear, Sam said. Just wear him out. Give him the B&D, S&M, J&B night of his dreams, and he'll be vanilla for the rest of the week, or until the relationship ends, whichever comes sooner. I don't follow your reasoning, I said. The only reason he wants kinky rough sex with you, Sam explained patiently, is because you don't want it. Once you show that you do want it, he won't want it anymore, and you can have the sexless relationship that every bear couple eventually ends up having. Maybe it was the massive painkillers, but Sam's position made sense. I was combing Barbie's simulated flocking when the doll writhed in my hands. I dropped it and leapt out of my chair, then groaned and rubbed my back. Barbie just groped me, I said. Sam rolled his eyes. Did you take one of my blue pills or one of my red ones? Because if you took the blue one... At that point, Barbie spoke on his own and we both shut up.
Oh, yeah,
it said in a mini butch voice.
You like that big bear dick, don't ya?
Then I glanced at Sam's computer. His browser was showing the homepage of Mason Stone, bear porn star. There was a looping video clip of Mason jerking himself off and repeating,
Oh, yeah, you like that big bear dick, don't ya?
I reached over and shut the browser down. Barbie stopped moving. Then I started the browser again and went to Mason Stone's site. Sam had set it as the homepage default.
Take it all!
Barbie shrilled suddenly.
You like that big bear dick, don't ya?
I stormed into Smokey's office with Barbie and slammed it down on his desk. Careful, Smokey said. Those things cost over 50 cents to make. You're going to use these things to subliminally influence bears across the country into buying Mason Stone's latest porn video, I said accusingly. Well, duh, Smokey said. Barbie is keyed to respond to Mason's vocal frequencies. Once the geek bears figure it out, they'll be falling all over each other to buy it. I shook a finger at him. You'll never get away with it. Bears will never fall for a clever marketing scheme designed to make them buy more bear-related merchandise. Oh, fuck it, I said. I'm going to get one of Sam's red pills. The next day, I was in even worse shape. I just glared at Sam when he entered the office and kept sticking pushpins into Barbie.
I take it the sex overload thing didn't pan out, he said.
Not in the slightest, I said through gritted teeth.
Now Richard wants to introduce me to a sling, and something to do with bendy straws. This has gone way too far.
Sam rescued Bearby just as I pushed a pushpin right into its crotch.
Let me take care of Richard, he said. I'll wear him out for you.
I considered this. On the one hand, it meant dating a bear I couldn't have sex with. On the other hand, Sam would keep supplying me with red pills.
Go ahead, I said wearily. Just make sure he doesn't enjoy it.
That night, I sat alone in my apartment and watched a rerun of The Nanny while I waited for news from Sam. The phone rang just as I was going to sleep. It wasn't Sam, but Charlie.
You have to come down to the hospital right away.
I eased myself out of the chair.
What is it? What happened?
Richard's in the hospital,
Charlie said.
They're trying to extract some kind of doll from his butt.
Even in my shock, I could smell a product liability lawsuit. When I arrived at the hospital, Richard had his ass in the air and was resting on a pillow. Sam looked half guilty, half defiant.
You were using Bearby for sex play? I asked in horror.
Well, Sam said, everything was going fine until Bearby freaked out. It started shaking and vibrating inside Richard, and finally it got stuck there.
Then I got a horrible idea. A wonderful, horrible idea.
Were you watching TV at the time?
I asked, grinning despite myself. Richard looked at Sam, then at me.
Well, as a matter of fact, we were.
We all looked up at the TV monitor above the bed, which showed the only person in the world whose vocal frequencies matched Mason's stones. And that, I thought, would be enough to sink the Bearby project permanently. Once again, Fran Drescher had saved the day.
And that story was Bears and Their Toys, written by Jonathan Cohen.
And now for something a bit more on the serious side. A prayer for Turkish bear Ahmet Yildiz.
From Joe Perez, posted to his blog, integrallygay.com, on November 26th. Joe's website, Integrally Gay, blog of a postmodern homophile. And if you're not familiar with the term homophile, it means those who love others of the same sex. Here is Joe's prayer for Ahmet Yildiz. Ahmet Yildiz, Ahmet Yildiz, Ahmet Yildiz. We recall today how you have been absent for 16 months since you left a cafe near the Bosporus Strait in Istanbul, and yet you have not really left us, and we believe you never will. Some of our brothers and sisters knew you closer as a 26-year-old straight-A student of physics, an aspiring teacher, a loving son and brother, a stocky and fun-loving young man. Or perhaps they knew you only as Turkey's gay poster boy, martyred by the tragic circumstances of your departure, victim of a so-called honor killing, shot 5 times by a religion-crazed father on account of openly acknowledging your homophilia. He is not the only perpetrator. Every soul who harbors hatred of homophiles shares part of the collective guilt. Ahmet Yildiz, your spirit endures forever. It endures not only in Muslim lands, but as a beacon for homophiles everywhere. May memory of your life and death raise awareness of the need for healing the wound in all our families and all our nations that is homophobia. Through your sacrifice, let us have faith that there is greater hope for reconciliation in areas of women's rights, sexuality, and the place of religion in our societies. Let us not forget your death and the sacrifices of so many victims of anti-homophile violence, lest we fail to heed Spirit's call for us to extend our capacity for compassion and love everywhere on the globe. And let us require justice for your killer, who remains unapprehended, and all perpetrators of evil. Until the world is healed of fear,
Duty and fraternity binds homophiles everywhere to keep your memory alive and to honor your name whenever we act with justice.
That was a prayer for Amit Yildiz. Music by Robert Miles, Bean and Leaf, Jonathan Cohn, The Advocate, and as ever, Rocco. You've been listening to Bear Soup, news, skews, schmooze, and interviews for the online Ursine community. This is your fur-faced friend, Bear author and editor Ron Serratia, named Bear of the Year 2008. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by Bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. Look for the Bear Soup page on Facebook and feel free to contact me at bearsoup@gmail.com. Thanks once again for listening to Bear Soup.